I was about to say, I saw Lena Dunham in concert last night.
Wow, did she play her big hits?
She played all her biggest hits. It was like self-effacing, confessional, spoken word, one could say.
Wow.
Yeah, she did an amazing job. This was not a concert. It was just her doing a reading from her latest book, Fame Sick, a memoir, which I haven't read, but I got a free copy because the tickets to this thing were freaking expensive. Yeah, she read an excerpt from her memoir and it was genuinely so gripping. Like, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. We were kind of like, LOL, I think I spotted a single person of color in the audience. Like, every single girl looked like a variation of Lena Dunham. It was crazy.
Of course, she shaped a generation.
Yeah, and like me and my other half Indian friend, Maya, were both like, oh, we're the token POC of this audience.
Wow, how does that feel?
Like being in high school again.
Yes, I can see that.
No, it was genuinely incredible. It was her, she did her reading, and then she got interviewed by Elijah from Girls. Oh my God, what's his name? Andrew Reynolds. Andrew Reynolds, who is a genius, and sang his little Broadway song. It was very like organic, like they didn't really plan the conversation, it seemed. And they had these like emotional moments where they both kind of like cried and hugged each other. And he was like, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you during all of that. And yeah, it was just so touching. It felt like such a special experience and so intimate, even though I was in an audience of like freaking 2,000 people at BAM. Everyone was laughing the entire time. Like, I was cackling. She's just such a magnetic person. She has so much like innate talent. I wish she had continued acting, honestly, because she was, and they acknowledged it yesterday, because recently I've been like, Lena Dunham was an amazing actor, and no one talks about that part of everything. But yesterday he was like, she doesn't get her roses for being an incredible actor.
Did she ever win anything for Girls? Like, I know she was nominated, but did she ever win?
Let's see.
I would sure hope so.
But I don't think it would be for acting. I feel like it was probably for like production or something. Directors Guild of America, Outstanding Directing Comedy Series. She received several Emmy Award nominations, 2 Golden Globes. I think watching too much, as we discussed on a previous episode, but like watching too much and realizing that every time she was on screen were the only times that I was compelled. That was when I really realized that she's like a genuinely amazing actress, because she can like really deliver her dialogue in this really compelling way. But anyways, it was so special.
I'm very jealous. I know she's doing, I think, a similar thing in London, but I did not get my shit together and score a ticket, unfortunately. But I feel like I would be so inspired. I know, okay, I'm not gonna say where she lives in London. I actually know almost exactly where she lives, because someone I know knows someone else who has like seen her. Don't put that in.
Lena Dunham, you have been doxxed, which is funny because she joked about how she was like, remember that time that I accidentally put Jemima Kirk's number on my story on Instagram? And she was like, it's still the same number. So maybe this is like a payback.
Maybe it's karma. But what I was going to say is, someone saw her on the bus, and the person telling the story was like, yeah, my friend saw Lena Dunham on the bus. And I thought that she was saying that her friend thanked Lena Dunham. And I was like, oh, me too, I would do the same thing. But no, she was saying that Lena Dunham thanked the driver, which also, love that.
Remember Thank You Bus Driver?
Yes. Wait, what?
It was this trend on like Australian TikTok or whatever, where they would like go, or maybe pre-TikTok, honestly. I think it was pre-TikTok, where they would go up to the bus driver and be like, thank you, bus driver, but like really obnoxiously.
Oh, yes. She did that.
Every time I think the bus driver, I say the same thing in my head. They were also kind of talking mad. Like, they weren't talking mad shit, but they were definitely throwing shade at Adam Driver, which was fascinating. Yes. And then Andrew Reynolds was like, yeah, I dated Anderson Cooper during the run of the show. So Dill was written to be...
Wait, is this his older boyfriend?
Yeah, like the news anchor.
But wait, yeah, there's so much tea coming now. Like, one, she's sort of acknowledging the fact that maybe maybe Jack Antonoff and Lord maybe had an affair. Honestly, like, Adam Driver went to Juilliard, I'm sure he's insufferable. Like, let's not kid ourselves. I think
Juilliard and the
Juilliard.
Navy. The combo of Juilliard and the Navy are crazy.
Oh, my
mix.
God. Nightmare. I was going to say nightmare blunt rotation. I guess just me and Adam Driver.
Navy SEAL, Juilliard dance major.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Can I be completely honest about something? I've never cared about anything less than, like, Lord's romantic life. I don't care about Lord, to be honest. Like, I don't give a fuck about her as a celebrity. I liked her album when I was in high school, but like since then, every time she comes up, I'm kind of like,
you don't know about the PowerPoint? That was such a thing.
What is the PowerPoint?
So Jack Antonoff produced Melodrama, Lorde's sophomore album. It came out when she was like 19, or they made it when she was 19. And they made it while she was basically staying at his and Lena's house in New York for like the summer. And following that, Lena Dunham and Jack Antonoff broke up. And Lorde, who had been like really involved in this like whole Taylor Swift, Lena Dunham like friend group thing, suddenly like they parted ways. And obviously like that was also kind of consumed in this whole like weird squad era for Taylor Swift and like all these friendships. It's like what was genuine, what wasn't. But people were always like, that's kind of weird. She was so close with him. Now they don't work together. She's not friends with Lena Dunham anymore. And so someone made this like viral PowerPoint that was all this evidence compiled of like Melodrama is actually an album that Lorde made about her weird affair with Jack Antonoff while she was having it with him after she broke up with her adult boyfriend that she had when she was a teenager for 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
She was with this, like, grown man for, like, all of her teen years. It's really weird.
None of it seems particularly shocking because she seems... It sounds like she's famous for that. So I'm kind of like... I don't really...
Yeah, wait, what? Who else did she do this with?
I don't know. I remember seeing all this... Constantly seeing stuff, which I, again, did not care about Lorde sleeping with people's boyfriends, but like I just don't find her a very interesting figure personally. Like, I don't, yeah, whereas like Lena Dunham, like watching, I don't know, I usually don't care about memoirs very much, and especially not celebrity memoirs, but this feels so like, we know how much she struggled during this time, but it's like actually crazy thinking about what this person went through, and like the fact that she continued to put out really high quality work in the midst of being like so insanely scrutinized and like belittled. Like, she and Andrew Reynolds talk about how on the set of Girls, they just didn't talk about what was going on with her. It was kind of like a unspoken, just like, let's not bring it up because we don't want to like ruin the vibe for anyone, including her. But like, she was just like going through all of this and still choosing to be like naked on screen and having sex and like embodying this character who was unlikable, even though that's not really like what her actual personality is. And it was just, I don't know. I'm so excited to read it personally.
Well, I think also to be someone with such a singular voice and what is now like such an influential and iconic voice, but have that voice be so scrutinized and criticized and like just hated by the public, and yet trying to continue and make impactful work in that exact voice must have been such a struggle. You're like, how do I articulate these things in this like almost God-given gift that I have for articulating them, all the while knowing that people are going to tear that apart and they hate it? It's crazy. I don't know. She's just like, she's kind of so singular. And I'm so happy that she's finally getting to like embrace her qualities as a writer and as a storyteller again.
She has such an knack for storytelling. Like, the way that she was just speaking off the cuff last night was so profoundly funny in a way that I was like, you're just able to string words together in such a funny way. And she's so culturally fluent. She can go high-low so quickly and easily. And it was kind of interesting also seeing the crowd, because it felt like some of the girls got it and some of the girls did not get it. And it was like interesting to kind of see the divide.
Well, interesting to be a girl that wouldn't get it and spend, you know.
Well, because it's so massive. Like, I think Girls is just so mainstream that it's like, everyone watches Girls, especially if you live in New York. It's like kind of standard practice, but it feels like Lena Dunham comes from such a class of neurotic intellectuals that it's like she's kind of imbuing her work with that, but not everyone's gonna pick up on this. I don't know, it was interesting.
Right, like I've experienced Girls almost through the lens of the Girls Rewatch podcast. I feel like we have the experience of being like precocious 14, 15 year olds watching this show and like not getting all the references and then getting them all now.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's, it's, yeah.
It's something like that. It's also like, it is a bit of a you had to be there thing with Girls sometimes. And also it feels similar to me with like people not picking up on like the inherent gayness of Sex and the City. Like Sarah Jessica Parker being just like a hag and showing up to Big's apartment and being like, get it while it's hot, and people like making that into a meme.
People are like editing it as like a horror film or something.
Yeah, yeah, they're like, she's so creepy, kind of putting it within the realm of like heteronormative like dating culture bullshit. But yeah, I feel similar to that. Like Girls sometimes, it's so easy to miss. Sometimes the girls you get it. I don't know, it's kind of camp.
And the girls you don't. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
And speaking of girls who get it, I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is part two of a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet. The symbiosis of our two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. So since moving to the UK, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of like really bold comments about my accent. People feel very at liberty to say stuff like, oh, I would can't be attracted to someone with a North American accent. Or people have told me that the way I say certain things like just sounds trashier. But probably the craziest, without a doubt, came from a guy that I was actually seeing. He told me that my accent reminded him of porn, because everyone in porn is usually American. And I still don't really know what to make of that specific comment, but in the moment, I did find it quite fascinating. I guess because you don't really encounter that many British people in porn, or at least like I don't know, the more I thought about it, it was like, I guess there aren't a lot of British accents in porn. But then I was like, we're North American and England has such a distinct cultural industry for itself that surely maybe that would extend to porn. But I was like, I guess not. I guess there aren't any British porn stars. How fascinating. What does this say? But then only a few weeks later, I found myself completely corrected. So I was at a party and I walked in on a debate about Bonnie Blue. Maya, were you aware of Bonnie Blue when I first suggested this episode?
No, straight up, I had no idea what you were talking about. I thought you were referring to Ashley Madison, which also came up, and I was like, surely there can't be two websites that are called two first names. I guess Blue isn't a first name.
Unless you're Blue Ivy.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I had not heard of her, and I was quite shocked to find out who she was.
Yeah. So I basically walked in on a debate about a stunt that she pulled that we will be talking about a bit more later. But I was shocked too, and she seemed to already at this point be a household name in the UK. I just sort of moved there. She's so infamous here in the UK. I say here while I record from Toronto. I've since come home for a trip. But I have to say, like, I'm really excited to potentially introduce her to North American listeners. It's a fun cultural exchange, if you will. So let me get into her background a bit.
Lay it on me, mama.
All right. Bonnie Blue is a 27-year-old adult content creator and probably one of the most reviled women in the United Kingdom.
Who's more reviled, her or Camilla Parker Bowles?
Oh, I think that Bonnie Blue might have, honestly, you're welcome, Camilla. She might have taken that honor from her.
It's about time, I feel like. I think someone needs to take the load. Literally!
Oh, and if there's someone who loves to take a load, let me tell ya. So Bonnie's real name is Tia Billinger, which is like so English to me. I just had to say that. And she grew up middle class in Draycott. Oh God, I'm probably mispronouncing that. A village in Nottinghamshire. So English. So she drops out of school during her A-levels, which is like this weird two-year period at the end of secondary school that British people do in order to get into university. Their schooling system, I don't fully understand it still. But she drops out and she gets a job working as a recruiter for the NHS, the National Health Services.
Is A-levels kind of like Cégep in Quebec?
Kind of. It's like, yeah, it's 2 years. It's like 16 to 18. And that's like, you have to do it. And based off of the grades you get in your A-levels, that's how you get into school. But I think some kids then do something else instead. Sorry, England. So, yeah, she gets a job working as a recruiter for the NHS. It's, like, a decent paying job. She's got, like, a house. She marries her teenage boyfriend, I guess, Ollie. And so she spends 5 years at this job, stable life. And then she says she got bored. So she quits her job and she moves to Australia with her husband. And while in Australia, she joins OnlyFans and then just, like, hits the ground running. She makes about 10K within her first month, apparently.
How do you make 10K in your first month?
Oh, well, let me tell you. So one of the few positive qualities that people are willing to attribute to Bonnie is her strong business acumen. And you can see this from the beginning with her OnlyFans. So she joins a platform and she, like, quickly hatches a plan for success based off of two realizations. The first is that, you know, OnlyFans is an oversaturated market and you have to stand out in order to succeed. So the first thing she ever shoots for the site was an orgy, which she organized by just cold messaging other OnlyFans creators and asking to collaborate. I think it was like a 5-people orgy, 2 girls, 3 guys. And she says that she knew she wasn't interesting or famous enough to, like, just sell photos of her in her underwear, and that she, like, had to kind of make this statement in order to gain traction. The second is that she doesn't like the phoniness of porn. Like, she describes this first orgy with, like, fellow content creators as being essentially silent and weird. She doesn't like the kind of artificial setup of it all. And so for Bonnie, the ideal scene partner is someone who not only lacks a background in porn, but often someone with no sexual experience at all. Maya, when you hear the term barely legal, what does that conjure up for you?
I mean, usually an 18-year-old, like someone who has just crossed the threshold of, like, legal adulthood, but might still have the prefrontal cortex is still very much cooking in that brain oven. It's half-baked, let's say. And maybe the maturity levels are not necessarily there, but you are a legal adult by definition. And I mean, I know it's also, like, a porn category, usually with girls who are quite young looking and, like, don't have big tits, basically.
But barely legal, like, it's usually girls that you're thinking of, right?
Yeah, usually it's girls who come to mind who, like, look super young. I don't necessarily think it inherently means they are that young, but, like, usually it's girls who, like, look quite childlike.
Or another one I was thinking a lot about was Girls Gone Wild, which is fairly amateur and often, like, meets a genuine definition of barely legal, like, co-eds who probably turned 18 in the last 12 months on spring break.
College-age girls, usually.
Yeah. So one of the things that Bonnie does to really, like, get her OnlyFans popping off is subvert those expectations of the college-age girl by pursuing college-age boys. And while living in Australia in 2023, she realizes that Schoolies, which is their version of, like, Frosh Week, is taking place near her, and she sees an opportunity, basically.
Schoolies.
Schoolies. Wait, can you do it in an Australian accent?
Schoolies.
Wow, you're quite good.
Thank you.
So Bonnie was living in a Hilton, she says, during Schoolies, and she realized there were a lot of boys staying there. And so she posts a call out basically on social media looking for guys who are in town for Schoolies to sleep with for a video. She only films one video on the first day, but then by the second day, she's doing 5 in a day. And eventually, like, guys start lining up basically in order to shoot with her. So she's shooting for free. The only payment is coming through people buying these videos. And these are all guys that are, like, new university age. And so this proves to be so successful that she ends up repeating the formula in the States during spring break.
Wait, what do you mean she's shooting for free exactly?
Not for free. Like, she's getting paid through OnlyFans. But she is basically saying to guys, like, hey, come fuck me. Like, whoever you are, come have sex with me for free. So she does this again in the States during spring break, and she sleeps with 122 guys over that period. And then again in the UK, and she sleeps with 158.
It ain't easy.
It ain't easy. And she doesn't do background checks. She, like, will literally just share her location, post on social media, be like, hey, boys, I want you to come, whatever.
Does she have security detail?
She does have security now because she got robbed earlier on in her career.
Robbed is, like, very lucky.
Yeah, well, because guys would come and then, like, she had some of them just, like, staying with her and then, like, someone took a bunch of her shit. So she has security now. She can't leave the house without security these days.
It's really dangerous. But
I sent you a TikTok. It's a vlog that she filmed in 2025 during Schoolies where she's driving around the Bonnie Blue Bang bus. Her TikToks are funny because she'll be like, come with me for a day of work. And then she's like suddenly taking a bunch of dildos out of a purse. But then she'll like show you the lunch she's eating.
She's on the Bang bus.
She looks like, for reference, if you people haven't Googled her or don't know her, she looks like she should be on Love Island. Like she looks like, honestly, like Alex Earl, basically. Like she could be one of those girls.
Her little bus is so silly.
It's so funny.
Oh my God, the boys are so baby.
Well, Bonnie often calls herself a community worker. And she says she's basically found a calling for herself in helping young, sexually inexperienced men learn how to be with a woman. She's like, isn't it better they have their first time? Because, okay, I should add, she loves to be like, I want virgins to come and fuck me. And I love taking guys' virginities. And she's like, isn't it better that they have sex with someone like me who like does it for a living? I can teach them how to pleasure a woman. If they want to, like, let's say a boy's been growing up watching porn and he thinks it's okay to like choke a girl or do something, the girl's going to get upset if he tries to pull that the first time they have sex. But if he does it to me, it's fine because I'm me.
So it's actually just training them to have porn sex, which so the complete opposite of what she's purporting.
But no, Maya, she's an educator.
Sex educator was getting thrown around like so loosely back in the 2010s. I remember like every random influencer was like, I'm a sex educator. And you're like, okay.
The thing is we'll talk about this more later, but like Bonnie is like not exactly a political person. And she doesn't really put up much of a real facade of like being about sex positivity. Bonnie is about Bonnie's bank account. She's, you know, I think the community worker thing is example of her like career defining rage bait, basically. But I find her choice to bring in barely legal scene partners really interesting because to me it's also just not really clear who these videos are for, because traditionally like barely legal porn has been seen as this way of catering to some kind of like male pedophilic fantasy. And obviously there can be a reversal of this, like there are women that are attracted to like younger men, but that's not really what's happening here. Like Bonnie's audience is mostly men. So like, what do you think the appeal of this content is from like a viewer's perspective? Like, obviously we know why the 18-year-olds are lining up to have sex with Bonnie Blue, but like, why is someone on OnlyFans consuming this?
I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I think that, well, I mean, MILF content, first of all, is kind of a thing. Like, there is a market for watching older women. There's, like, literally grandma porn. Like, all over the place, truly. Grandma porn
is
everywhere.
This is, like, a hot 25-year-old woman. She's not a MILF.
Well, one, it's just, like, the spectacle of it. Like, I think it's, like, it's a little bit circus freak show. Like, how does she do it? One woman takes one bajillion penises, and you're like, whoa, how did she do that? Little Guinness World Record vibes. But then also a little P.T. Burnham. Yeah, a little bit of Guinness Record, a little bit of P.T. Burnham. I also think, I don't know, I mean, like, is she ever getting gangbanged? Or is it just like...
Oh, does she ever get gangbanged? Of course.
Yeah, yes. I like, that's also a porn category. I think, like, I think you just kind of get one hook. 5 trillion virgins. Fuck, one woman is just, the classifiers there are like visually striking, I guess, or like they're striking to the mind. And so it's like I could see why there's this like freakish element that people would like to watch.
The Mr. Beastification of sex work is how I would describe Bonnie Blue.
Yeah, that's good. Freak show. The internet taking things to such an extreme is just, yeah, classic. Hyper saturated. Like it's just like, it's like slime content, you know? It's just hyper everything.
Bonnie told the Australian site Mamma Mia her theory for the popularity of these videos. She says, usually people fake someone being 18 years old, like in normal porn, or pretend the guy's nervous. So when these people started to message, I was thinking, why don't I make my content more relatable, more organic, you know, less edited? I was aware a lot of my subscribers and followers were the younger generation, and I was thinking, if they're watching my content with a professional porn star, they're not going to be able to relate to that. So she thinks that the guys are, like, her audience are seeing themselves in these other inexperienced young men.
There's also something kind of sacred. There is something famously societally sacred about virginity. And so I think someone being let into what is understood as a sacred experience is probably, yeah, intriguing to the viewer, I guess, maybe. It's such a fleeting moment that when it's over, that person will not be a virgin again. So it's like, I don't know.
Akin to people watching like beheading videos or something, or just like, this is...
Sorry, yeah, you can't take it back, you know? Like, it's like a milestone in someone's life. I'm making it sound like I am interested in this.
Wow. Sounds like you've thought about this a lot.
I'm trying to get inside the head of a male viewer, you know?
So, as I'm sure you can imagine, there was, like, an intense media backlash to Bonnie. People have been calling her a predator for actively seeking out young men for her videos.
You don't say.
Bonnie's response is, she said, my hobby is 18-year-olds. Go and find yours.
Yeah, it's not great, is it? She feels like she'd be on Dr. Phil or something.
I mean, yeah, she's like what you were saying, like the freak show is the perfect way to put it. But I think she's actually someone, we'll talk about this more later. I think she's someone who's so almost apathetic to everything in the world around her that she's able to just like play into the freak show for what it arises.
She possesses the proud depravity of someone who would go on like the Tyra Banks show or Dr. Phil or Oprah, or, you know, like 2000s sensational spectacle.
She frustrates like every person who interviews her too, because she kind of has these talking points that she'll repeat that are akin to that. Yeah. So she continues to seek out non-professional partners for her videos. This isn't exclusive to co-eds. She's upset a lot of people by saying she wants to hook up with 18-year-olds and their dads. Although she says that once she did actually draw the line and was like, that's too incesty for me. But she likes to like post these videos where she's like, okay, boys, I'm here in your town, like dads, boyfriends, virgins, whoever. I'm not doing her accent right. It's like way more northern, but.
Wait, she fucks the kid and his dad at the same time?
She's not actually doing that, but basically when she's pulled up in a house, it's like guys are just lining up to like get to come in the room and have sex with her. She's kind of just like stationed in the room and she's like, everyone come down. She said that like lecturers for the universities that she's like coming around during, you know, their freshers or frosh week have come and also had sex with her.
She, what? I really, for some reason, have Jay from the Inbetweeners voice in my head. I just can be, it just keeps being like, I'll fuck you and your dads. I don't think that's right.
It was great. It was better than my Bonnie Blue impression.
Should we put a trigger warning for bad British accents?
Yes. And Australian accents.
You guys can deal with that one.
She also invites married men to come and cheat on their wives with her. Again, she posts these like call out videos and she's like actively like saying like, come cheat on your wives, cheat on your girlfriends with me. But the point is that like her niche of porn is based around this idea of ordinary guys getting to hook up with a porn star. And her co-ed sons and like their subsequent backlash proved to be very lucrative, because eventually she's making as much as $2 million a month on OnlyFans, according to her.
Everyone loves a gimmick, you know?
Speaking of gimmicks, then in 2025, she decides to set the unofficial world record for sleeping with the most men in 24 hours. 1,057 to be exact. This would mean that every man technically would have like 41 seconds to have sex with her.
Yeah, like they'd have to be like kind of, sorry, this is really TMI, but like probably jerking it in line.
So to be clear, she set this record. And they did do that.
That's a little impressive.
She set up at this house in London and she shared the address and like posted on these promotional social media posts. In one of them, she's like, this message is for dads, husbands, students, and of course, barely legal 18-year-olds. I would love you to rearrange my insides this Saturday near Oxford Circus in London. Dude, the queues. She was like in this old mansion and the queues are going up and down these stairs out the door.
It's literally just to put it in for like 30 seconds. Like, it's like you're just sticking it in one time, basically.
No, there was some gang banging going on. Wait. Well, but no, but like technically, yeah. So There's been like some people scrutinizing whether or not she successfully had sex with that many men. But like, to be clear, there was a lot of people that came through. There's a documentary that was shot during this time and the floor was just covered in used condoms. It's insane. So the only barriers to entry were an ID, a consent form, and a condom. There were no STI tests in force. Her team prepared by ordering 20 tubes of KY jelly. Men queued up, yeah, for hours, like all day. This was going for a full 24 hours. In order to get to all of them in an efficient manner, they did have to like get hard before entering the scene. There might have been like a fluffer person.
Who is the fluffer person? And like, this is the real story I want to hear about, you know? Like,
if you watch videos in line, there are some men pantsless in line. There are some men like fully clothed, some men in these bonny blue balaclavas, some men posting their faces on TikTok being like, I'm number whatever in the queue to fuck Bonnie Blue. It was wild.
Every time I saw a video of this, it would just be like some kid in a shiesty.
I'm going to send you a TikTok. It's a mom coming to the queue and pulling her 19-year-old son out of it. I'll just send it to you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You guys can't see, but the range of expressions that Maia is making while she watches this TikTok is like the full spectrum of human emotion.
She's like, put on your clothes, which suggests that he just like had his dick out. Like, it's like actually so many layers of humiliation, like all at once.
So why did she know he was in this queue? Like, was he posting
about it? He was probably posting about it. And his friends were probably like, yo, go get your son. Like,
so crazy.
It really is the circus. Like, the circus is coming to town, literally, her little honk honk truck.
She's
like,
literally filming this at Oxford Circus, which is just in central London. So Joseph Bernstein for the New York Times compared this stunt to Jubilee's popular Surrounded series, which is where like online kind of figures and commentators are placed into a group of everyday people who disagree with them and kind of debate at them. He calls these stunts dramas that enact the complex interplay between creators and the nameless masses to whom they owe their success. More than this, they are a new frontier in the parasocial, the traditionally one-sided exchanges between audience and star that define modern digital culture. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like those videos where it's like Candace Owens is surrounded by like 10 people who hate her and they're like arguing with her. It's like Jubilee videos.
Is it a Jubilee video?
Yeah, it's a so it's called Surrounded. It's this like Jubilee series.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think Andrew Callahan did one recently. It's like Andrew Callahan debates like 100 conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, the parasociality of it. Like, I think, I mean, I haven't seen any of these videos, but is Bonnie visible of face and then the man fucking her is not visible of face? Like,
no, they're not POVs necessarily. I mean, sometimes the guys wear ski masks, but sometimes their faces are fully in it. And I think for them, it's like the cred of like being, it's like, if you were like one of 100 people that got this limited edition thing, it's like you were one of the quantifiable like number of people who did get to fuck Bonnie Blue. It's like a weird like experience you got to have.
It's a new kind of hype beast. It's a sex hype beast for sure. You know, it's the new supreme,
she's the supreme
lineup
of the porn stars.
They're gonna send Complex out with some hot girl to start like interviewing these guys in the lineup. It's gonna be a whole thing. Yeah, I mean, sex is just, it's just such a commodity. I feel like this is just sex as commodity to like the nth degree that someone would line up to do this. It's interesting thinking about this as an extension of like boys in like, I don't know, the 19th century going and sleeping with sex workers. You know what I mean? To lose their virginities to them. Like, I feel like that was like very common, or like young soldiers doing this, but then it's so hyper mediated and so it's like carnivalesque, I guess.
I don't know if I even want to say like it speaks to the like modern kind of meaningless of sex, because I don't know, like, I don't know if teenage boys historically like have like the most sort of deep or meaningful relationships with sex generally to begin with. But I think this idea of like treating your first sexual experience or like your virginity through this lens of like content and like what is like a shareable story, and like it's like doing it for the bit, doing it for the story, or what's it called, doing it for the gram, what do they say, for the vine, what is it,
I don't know, for the full walls.
I sound like such a chopped unk. No, but it's like you're doing it for the purpose of being able to like make content off of it or like share this story or whatever.
Yeah, it's not really the exact same as like doing it. I remember when I was a virgin in high school, like I feel like it was such a thing for me to do it that like it wasn't really about the act of doing it. It was more about doing it so I could tell my friends that I did it, you know? And like my friends had a code word. I think I've said this on this podcast before. We had a code word that we put in a group chat on Facebook that signaled to each other that we lost our virginities, and it wasn't really about sex at all. It was about saying you did it. But then this is like taking that and taking the kind of private sphere of a friend group and actually turning it into content. And it is interesting thinking about, like, I mean, Lena Dunham talked about this yesterday too. She was like, we're all fame sick to some degree, and like thinking about the demonic turn and the fact that your entire following is kind of like your friend group in a way, like this new friend group. And so you're doing it to let your following know that even if you don't even have an actual following, but even if you have like 500 Instagram followers, it's like, well, I have to let them know that I did this, because everything needs to be publicized, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like nothing's worth it. You know that whole idea? It's like, oh, if you didn't take pictures and post to Instagram, it wasn't worth it. And like that extending to virginity in a sense is bizarre. Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of who you are. Even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. That's why I love Ruggable. With so many styles to choose from, you're sure to find the right fit for you. I have one of their farmhouse style rugs in my living room, and it's completely transformed the space. The pattern is inspired by traditional quilts, and it gives the room the cozy, crafted feel I've been wanting. Plus, it's made for real life. It's stain-resistant, machine-washable, and pet-friendly, which is a game-changer as someone living with flatmates and a cat. Refresh your home at Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code REHASH at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com, and use the code REHASH at checkout. Nice. Lately, I've been more intentional about what I wear day to day, leaning into pieces that feel effortless, comfortable, and still put together. It just makes getting dressed simpler, and Quince has been my go-to. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything just works without overthinking it. I want to plan an entire vacation around Quince's gorgeous selection of 100% European linen pieces. With classic silhouettes in such a breathable fabric, they're the epitome of comfy chic. And Maya is looking at a summer kitchen refresh, so naturally, she's got her eye on a set of handcrafted wooden bowls from Quince. They're eco-friendly, made domestically, and somehow reasonably priced. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/rehash for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash. Bonnie, yeah, definitely plays into the parasociality of it, because she likes to position, like we said earlier, what she does as part of this fight against the male loneliness epidemic. I don't think that she truly in her heart necessarily sees it this way, but she likes to talk about these things that she does as like her giving back. Like, hey, these guys don't have to like watch porn, they can live porn. It's almost like VR. It's like they can have the real experience of it by doing this with me, and in that way I'm helping men by giving them sex because they're being deprived of it by women. And so she had like a documentary crew from Channel 4 following her for the 6-month window that like this world record stunt fell under. And she said she wanted to do this documentary so she could show to people that the men who watch her content or who are in her videos are normal, nice guys, and they're not freaks. Although like if you watch the documentary, that's not how they're positioned at all. And this documentary, like, I would say is quite critical of both Bonnie and her antics. It begins with the filmmaker saying that she learned about Bonnie through her teenage daughter who had encountered her on social media. And then the film ends in this kind of like, it's kind of lame. She's like trying to confront Bonnie and she's like, but think about my teenage daughter. Like, yeah, you're doing this, you're making money, but think about my teenage daughter. It's like, okay. Like, you know, your teenage daughter is going to be exposed to a lot of crazy shit on Instagram. Like, it's just not her problem. And the craziest thing is that this documentary that is like condemning Bonnie's stunt is basically showing the stunt. I didn't have to watch any content from the actual video. I saw it in this documentary. So I'm going to send you, I filmed my computer.
So she films the 18-year-olds like having sex, like the documentarian films the 18-year-olds having sex.
I'm going to send you some clips that I had recorded, making sure I'm sending them to you and not someone else, because that would be an insane text to accidentally send to somewhere else.
I keep wanting to be like, okay, if a man did this, there would be so much uproar. If a man was explicitly like, I'm going to go fuck every 18-year-old on the planet for views and money. But then it's like, porn is just so diffuse and mainstream anyways that it's like, it doesn't even need to be a stunt. That's just like most porn. And so it's funny to think about. Not that I'm like, oh, Bonnie should be getting away with this because like, if men can do it, women can. But I'm just, it's interesting that if you reverse it, it's like, well, the reversal is just porn.
Girls Gone Wild was like a successful video series for years. And it's basically these guys showing up at spring break with a video camera. At least the guys who are having sex with Bonnie aren't being found at like 2 a.m. while they're drunk, like walking around the streets. She's like, hey guys, come here. And they're like, okay, I want to.
The fact that she's saying it out loud, I think really freaks people out, that she's like, I'm explicitly seeking out virgins. Like, obviously that's creepy. Sorry, I'll watch these videos now.
No worries.
Okay.
Can you see, like, she's like, they're filming her while she's being.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the other video, it shows clips from her actual videos, and it's even crazier.
Yeah, it's like extremely full frontal.
This is being filmed, showed on television in a video that's like, wouldn't it be terrible if a young girls and boys like came across this woman's videos that aren't her having sex? It's just her on Instagram being like, come have sex with me. But they're like, we will show this and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, we'll show the like actual sex. That's crazy. Also because we're worried about the 18-year-old boys and then it's like, well, you're putting them on the documentary. You're like exacerbating the visibility of this content that you're freaking out about.
And this whole thing just like really highlights to me the hypocrisy of like British sexual morals, like especially with the media, because we've watched British television. We've seen Love Island. Like, how would like you describe the difference between England and America in that sense?
It was funny when you were talking about how your voice is so associated with porn, like this comment that this guy made, and fuck him for that, first of all. But like, it's crazy because when you were saying that, I was like, that's so funny because the kind of pan-British aesthetic is kind of a porn aesthetic. Like, the way that, I'm not saying every British person looks like this by any means, but, you know, this kind of, like, the most visible British aesthetic at the moment is this, like, kind of hyper-sexed look. Yeah. Like, the girls in Love Island will wear these bikinis that are just, like, intentionally 5 sizes too small where the bottom of their boobs hang out of them. Like, it's so funny. Like, the bikinis just don't, no one's bikinis is fitting them. They're only wearing thongs at this point, like the bikini bottoms, like they all have these like super poofy filler lips. Like it's very porny, and like the false eyelashes. So when you were saying that, it was funny to me because I was like, that is such a British look, and yet you're being associated with porn.
Bonnie Blue looks like she should be on Love Island.
She looks exactly like, I don't know, like Millie or something from season.
Yeah, like she's indistinguishable from like the women on that show. But like the first time I watched Love Island, I was also like, oh, I didn't know that you could air people as they're having sex like that. I was kind of dumbfounded. I didn't realize that like you could show that kind of stuff on television.
No, I remember like when I was a teenager watching all this British media, and there's like full frontal in all of it. Like they're a lot looser with the nudity, which is whatever. But like on Skins, I remember in like the first or second episode, Chris's teacher, he like sees her full frontal in the locker room, and they just show everything, and like they're like I'm pretty sure penises in that show, like you see
Michelle's boobs. She's supposed to be a high schooler.
Oh yeah you do. And then in betweeners too, like you see Neil's penis, like it's you see everything. And they're a lot like more loose with that kind of stuff than the US is. So
well, there's also like multiple naked reality television shows. I know someone who was on Dating Naked. There's Naked Attraction. There's Dating Naked, which is like Love Island, but they're naked the whole time. There's more. And then Channel 4, which aired the Bonnie Blue documentary, they have this really fucked up documentary series called Virgin Island, where a bunch of adult virgins are like going through this weird sex therapy, and the whole thing is aired, and you watch this naked sex therapist teach this guy like how to go to third base. It's filmed. They like record people masturbating. Like, you're not watching it, but you're hearing the audio. This is a show that's like a documentary series. They have literal pinup girls also in the newspaper. I don't know if they still do, but they did for years.
No, British culture is like, it's this fascinating combination of like reservedness and like stiff upper lippedness, but then also extreme horniness. Like, and it's like a very flirtatious culture. That's funny.
It's crazy because I've been told multiple times how direct I am, which I don't know if you know me. I'm not like actually that direct of a person. But living
Anna is probably the most indirect person that I know.
I know. But in the UK, I'm considered direct.
That's crazy.
And yet, like, I feel like as a North American, I have like a certain level of like, I don't know, like I feel quite prudish compared to like some of the media, at least. It's weird. It's such a weird place.
Yeah, I mean, the US has its own weirdness with like the contradictory aspects of sex in popular
culture. It's like
mirror,
I guess. Yeah. But I don't know. So there's just, it's weird that there's so much like national uproar over like this specific woman and her antics. Like, even this documentary that showed Bonnie Blue has received backlash for platforming her. Like, people are treating it like it's her personal vanity project. There's no commercials on, like, all the ads were pulled, basically, from it.
I mean, okay, times have also changed significantly, I feel like, in the past few years. And I think that, like, the bar of what we consider children has risen. Like, we're starting to refer to 18-year-olds as, like, straight-up children a lot of the time. And I think that there is a lot more concern about young people, I think, in, like, this post-Euphoria world. Post-Me Too, like, I think that there's a lot more. And all the age gap discourse, like, I think that the timing of it is probably what changes everything.
Maybe, but Virgin Island aired this year.
Like, I know, but maybe it's not having the same mainstream, like maybe. Bonnie Blue has reached across the pond at this point. And so it's like, I can see why it's like generating so much controversy, because a lot of people were like, you were molesting those young boys. We have a pretty intense culture now around like people who are 18 to 21.
I also think it's like the fear of the internet and the fear of online, where it's like, if you're airing this stuff on television, it's like there are still people who are very much in control of this, but like they're scared of what clicking on a Bonnie Blue video would lead to, I suppose.
There's that. I also forgot to mention, you know, Epstein files. Like, everything is very heated and sensitive right now. And I can see why this is causing so much backlash in a way that it probably wouldn't have, like, 10 years. It probably would have been, like, once again, on Dr. Phil or Tyra Banks, but, like, not anywhere else.
But also, like, okay, so this whole thing has, like, made me think a lot about the differences between feminism in Britain and in North America, particularly the U.S. I mean, you won't agree with me, but, like, do you think that Bonnie Blue would have been received at least a bit differently if she was American and, like, based in America?
I mean, I think the media scrutiny, it's the same with when we talk about Love Island, right? Like, the scrutiny upon the Love Island UK contestants is way greater than the scrutiny upon US ones, because like, the UK is just so much smaller and confined and everyone watches it. Like, it's national media versus here. But I don't know. I'm thinking of past porn. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Mia Khalifa and other porn stars who have been so, like, derided here. I can't tell. I can't tell if it would have had the same popularity. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, like, to be clear, like, I don't think America is kinder to sex workers. I don't think that it's, like, some haven for that kind of stuff.
Not that I'm saying that Bonnie Blue is being, like, persecuted in the way Mia Khalifa was. Obviously, not equating those things, but...
Sure. But I think in the States, like, money talks louder. I think that her financial success and, like, her abilities as a businesswoman would have probably been taken more into consideration with our reaction to her. Like, I think people, there would have been more of a debate around, like, But, you know, she is like kind of an entrepreneur. She's making her bag. She's like subverting something by targeting barely legal young boys instead of the reversal. And I also just think that like the mindset of like sex work is work feels really American to me, because it's like the inherent value in something being work and being a source of income, like I think is not maybe like uniquely American, but like feels very much embedded in just that culture, I guess, or like in like American values. And also the idea of the like choice feminism and like bodily autonomy as something that women fighting for the right to do whatever they want with their body is really North American because of like reproductive, because of fights over reproductive rights that aren't ongoing in the UK. Like the UK is really concerned about like defining what womanhood is, and there's a lot of debates around that and like protecting women, quote unquote, but not so much about a woman's like personal agency in the same extent, at least like on the surface. Maybe these are generalizations, of course.
That's interesting. I mean, I wonder if Bonnie Blue had just fucked 1,000 regular guys and didn't put out the call that it was barely legal. Like, I do wonder if also that would have changed public perception, because I think the barely legal thing, once again, I just think it's like an across the aisle thing where people are shaking hands whenever it comes to the kids. And so I can imagine Americans also getting freaked by that because of, once again, like Epstein, et cetera, et cetera. But if she just fucked 1,000 men who were not barely legal, like, I think that that would have been received differently in America for sure. Like, I think that people would have been like, wow, what an entrepreneur. I think once you throw the 18-year-old thing in, it kind of loses steam. But
no, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think maybe because I first heard about her through the 1,000 men stunt, that's like the thing I primarily associate with her, even though her brand was very much de-virginizer before that for many years.
I can't stop. Every time we say 1,000 men, I can't stop thinking about like 1,001 nights, like Arabian Nights. She is Scheherazade.
So I want to close off this episode with a bit of like a callback to the last time we covered sex on the internet, which is when Maya did an episode on the iconic porn star Sasha Grey. Because I kind of see this episode as almost a spiritual sequel to that one. Sasha, for those who don't remember, was like this pioneer almost of internet pornography. She intentionally joined the industry at age 18. She had this like really short but prolific career that spanned the late 2000s into, I think, like the very early 2010s. And as a result, she became a bit of like an icon of the indie sleaze era as well. She was known as the intellectuals porn star. She was thin and small-chested, a bit outside of the norm of what you would imagine for a porn star of that era. She had long brown hair. She talked about existential philosophy. She was very insightful about pornography. She talked about the performance of it. She was quite meta. But at the same time, like, her particular niche in porn was very hardcore. And there's like reason to assume that like her popularity pushed certain types of porn maybe into the mainstream. In the episode, we talked a lot about this complicated gray area. We kept saying gray area. And what's so embarrassing is that you thought that we were making a pun and I just was saying gray area. And it took me until the end of the episode to realize.
I don't remember that at all. That's funny.
I do, because I listened back to it and I was like, oh, I remember I didn't put two and two together until like the very end. But we talked about the gray area she occupied as someone who entered sex work at a very young age, but who did so in this like thoughtful manner where the narrative was very much about how she was in control. It didn't matter that she was, you know, getting punched or like beat up by the guys that she's having sex with, because a lot of the time it was being spun, or like you could defend it in this idea of like, yes, but she's in control. She wants that. And Bonnie, to me, she presents some similar traits to Sasha. She got into sex work on her own volition. She found success by carving out this niche for herself. Her videos are shocking and boundary pushing, and she chooses to do like extreme sex acts, and she says she loves it. And she's positioned as holding the power in these situations because she's the one instigating it. She's the famous one, I mean, in these situations. And yet has like earned that power by willfully subjugating herself, being like, hey guys, I'm gonna basically be on all fours on this bed in London for 24 hours, like come through and like fuck me. And as she told an interviewer, she has taken control over sexualizing herself in a society that was going to do it anyways. But what are some differences between these two women? Like, how would you relate Bonnie Blue to Sasha Gray? Because we were having kind of a difficult conversation in that episode and trying to work out our feelings about Sasha, because we wanted to grant her her agency, but also weren't fully comfortable with what she'd done with said agency, I suppose.
With Sasha Gray, well, yeah, what we felt was complicated about Sasha Gray was that she had this whole stance that she had kind of come into porn with this plan, basically. She was a woman with a plan, and she executed it, and she had a good time, and then she left. And we were like, okay, but that's not how it is for everyone. And the way you talk about porn sometimes kind of obfuscates a lot of the more exploitative elements of the industry. Also, she positioned the way that she was having sex as this kind of like artful thing that would, you know, instigate intellectual philosophical thinking within the viewer. And we were like, I don't necessarily know, queen. I think people just want to see you have sex. And it was hard to actually really figure out if she had full agency, because she was working within this like institutional paradigm where, unfortunately, she is a woman in a video getting fucked and like beat up by a bunch of guys, which is perpetuating this kind of submissive pornographic image. And so we were like, oh, I don't know if you actually have the agency that you do, even if you did in like a practical sense. Like, I don't know if you have the visual agency, because now that type of porn has really blown up and most women have to engage, like most, like a lot of porn stars have to engage now in these like hardcore acts that you were helping to popularize. Whereas Bonnie Blue, she's kind of weaponizing like the word agency in a way that on her side of things obfuscates like the fact that she's using her experience and age to kind of get these young impressionable men to have sex with her on camera. And so it's like, it feels like almost the inverse of each other, where it's like, oh, you actually maybe have more, you have more agency, and you're not really acknowledging the power dynamic maybe there, that you're like a famous person, this is an anonymous virgin, and there is like a little bit of an imbalance there regardless. I mean, there's an imbalance going both ways, but yeah, I could see them kind of being like an inverse of each other in a way.
Oh, an inverse? That's a really interesting way to put it, because I didn't really think about it that way. Like, I think, yeah, definitely, if we're talking about in the immediate sense, like who has agency, I mean, Bonnie Blue is creating things as an independent creator with, yeah, non-professional and like literally inexperienced participants. So yeah, in that sense, she probably has like the most power that like any kind of woman working in porn has ever had.
And I think the inherent power of taking someone's virginity is that like that moment will be a defining moment. Like, it doesn't have to be, but like could be a defining moment of their life. That's a moment that they will be able to revisit over and over again, whether or not they want to. And so a guy losing his virginity to Bonnie Blue is like, okay, maybe in 5 years he might regret that. Whereas Bonnie Blue, that's just another day in the life, you know? And so there is an imbalance.
That's just another like hour in the life.
That's another like minute in the life of Bonnie Blue. Yeah. So there is that imbalance as well. Like, this is not a milestone for her.
I've had this thing with Bonnie Blue where like and we'll get into this more, like I do not like her as a person, and I'm not necessarily going to try, and I don't know, I could see like a younger version of myself being like, fuck this, she's in control, like she can do whatever the fuck she wants, like maybe going more to bat to defend her. Yeah, I in theory don't care that she had sex with 1,000 men. When she first like came into my life and I first learned about her, it was a debate like at this party of people I don't know who were debating just that, like whether or not it was like fucked up and disgusting and weird, like guys being like, it's really fucked up that she did this, and girls trying to be like, yeah, but whatever, like trying to defend her. So that's how I first encountered her, not even through people talking about the barely legal aspect of it, through people talking about like, is it just disgusting and messed up and bad for women that she fucked 1,000 men? Is it good for women that she fucked 1,000 men? Probably not. But also, as a woman, I don't personally feel like my personhood or the progress of women before me has been put at stake because she did this. Because she's just a very large drop in the bucket of, you know, media and like industries that have been exploiting women. But she didn't invent the wheel. She's just kind of made a self-driving car out of it.
Ooh, okay. Also, she's a large drop in the cum bucket is all that ran through my mind just now.
Great one-liner.
Yeah, I mean, I never enjoy the argument like this is setting women back. I think the only thing that's setting women back is like TikTok dummies, to be honest. But like when there's like a sex thing going on and people are like, this is setting women back, I'm kind of like, okay. I feel like this is thinly veiled anti-sex, like a little bit slut-shamey. I mean, it's hard when you're then yeah. you factor in the barely legal part. But like, if we're just going off the metric of like off the basis of her fucking 1,000 men, like, oh my god, who gives a fuck? You know, like yes, that does not bother me.
Crying slut-shaming feels really old-fashioned to me at this point, almost, because I don't know. I haven't really accused someone of like slut-shaming someone in so long, but genuinely, that feels. At least like a part of it. There's so much more going on, but also I don't know, I just like I don't care that she did that, and like I keep trying to like challenge that feeling in myself, and I keep coming to the same conclusion, which is that I do not care that she did that.
You're really like catch me trying to give a fuck.
Well, I'm sorry, like I was like surely I want if so many women are upset by her doing this, maybe I'm not thinking hard enough about it. But I watched the documentary. I read up about it. I think the only thing that I don't like about it is that, and again, I don't think that this is Bonnie's singular doing. She's part of a problem, but she didn't create the problem, is that it is pushing porn into this, like I said, like almost Mr. Beast mode. Mr. Beast mode. But like it's pushing it to this place where you really have to do extreme stunts in order to carve out any kind of name for yourself. She's making things more extreme across the board in the industry. That being said, OnlyFans was like, you're not allowed to do this type of shit. And they took away her page. Like, she's not on OnlyFans anymore. After the 1,000 men stunt, they were like, no, you're done.
Wait, why? I don't understand.
Because they started enforcing these rules with her about using non-professional participants. And I also just think it was too extreme. And OnlyFans keeps trying to be like, we're not a place where you sell porn, even though they are a place that you sell porn. And this was just like too big and glaring of an example of that for them to really be able to get away with them trying to rebrand themselves in a more dignified manner.
It's giving seeking arrangements. It's also giving McDonald's cafe.
Oh my god, McDonald's cafe, we see right through you, girl. So in the case of Bonnie Blue also, though, the issue isn't just what she's doing. It's also what she's saying and who she's associating herself with. So she's gone on record to say things like men cheat on their wives with her because their wives are lazy and withholding the sex that they owe their husbands. She's also said that women cry rape when they regret a sexual encounter, so it's better that guys sleep with her because she won't do that. And she's made strange bedfellows with some of the biggest names in the manosphere, particularly Andrew Tate. And in this joint podcast interview that Andrew and Bonnie did, which I felt like I was actually going through some kind of, it felt like torture sitting through that. They did this interview following her like 1,000 man stunt, and he gleefully celebrated her as the quote, perfect end result of liberal feminism. And Bonnie just sat there for 2 hours while he went on his crazy, like, classic rants about women. And she said that she backed everything he was saying, except for this one point he made when he suggested that all the men that are having sex with her are gay because of the amount of male DNA that has been inside of her. And she was like, that was the only thing she took issue with.
Famously contestable.
Definitely. I think there's flaws in that perfect argument. But the rest of it, which honestly, I think I blocked a lot of it out because I was like, I know that people think these things, but to have someone like yell them at me for an hour is like truly mind-boggling. But she was like totally on board with it. And she said, yeah, I am the end result of liberal feminism. I am the culmination of what every woman has been fighting for years. So do you think that maybe like part of the hate towards Bonnie stems from this idea that, she is, in a sense, making a mockery out of the causes that women have been fighting for?
Yeah, I think that's valid criticism. Yeah, it's one thing to be like, okay, she's making a bad name for women because she's just like banging a bunch of men. But her then ironically embracing that. It's like, I don't think that feminism needs to be wrapped up in this. I mean, like, I think that we've swung into this era of, like, really hating the sex positivity era that came before this. Like, even just watching Lena Dunham last night, I was like, there really hasn't been a woman since Girls who's gone on screen and been naked and, like, fucking with that body type since Girls. And that was 14 years ago. And that was supposed to be, like, the next thing that's happening. And now it's not happening.
But also, anyone with, like, a brain or self-respect would watch the way she got treated for doing that and be like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah, I'm not about to do this. And so it's Bonnie Blue feels like a bit of a psyop when it comes to kind of like attempting to put liberal feminism in its grave a little bit. I mean, God, this paired with like Lindy West and her polycule, I'm like, God, it's not looking good for liberal feminism, which I'm not like, you know, whatever. What do we even mean by liberal feminism here? I don't. Andrew Tate's version of liberal feminism is not my version of liberal feminism. But
wait, it's not? It's mine.
What? I saw the photos of them. He's like standing there and she's on her knees with her tongue open.
The worst part is she kept being like, yeah, I'd fuck Andrew. And Andrew was like so disgusted by her in that sense. Like he likes her because he likes that she proves this point for him. But like none of the Manosphere men respect her. They're like really disparaging towards her, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, the right loves to seize upon people who seem like they could be the downfall of... It's kind of a classic case, but...
To me, she feels like the mirror world version of liberal feminism or like choice feminism, which is like what happens when, you know, what is a complicated and like flawed belief system, whatever. What happens when like that gets perverted by this like free market capitalism of the internet, right? I think that there are merits to liberal feminism, and then there's a lot of drawbacks to it, and it's like complicated, and like working out the feminism of that era, like the Lena Dunham era that we've been talking about, Sasha Gray era. That's one thing. But this is like what happens when, you know, the wrong people learn that language and, you know, abuse it and turn it on its head, basically. And I do think the debate around the feminism of Bonnie Blue is like quite misguided because she's not a feminist. And I think her like vehement anti-feminism is a response to the feminists criticizing her to an extent. And like, I think she's going to continue to say and do outrageous things and align herself with outrageous people the more and more she becomes ostracized from society, because where else is she supposed to go? And like earlier this year, she faked a pregnancy and wore a prosthetic belly during spring break. Like she's gonna keep doing her crazy shit. But in her extreme stunts and her gangbangs, you know, she compares herself to an athlete pushing their body to the limits, which did remind me a bit of Gooners, what we were talking about there in that episode. And this through line's been drawn to me for like much of the season so far, which is that the central belief system at the heart of sex on the internet right now is nihilism. Like it was there with Clavicular, it's there with Gooners, it's there with Bonnie. Bonnie told Andrew Tate, so they were talking about like having kids, and she was like, the world's gone to shit anyway, whether we've got more kids in it or not, it's fucked regardless, so just live your life the best. You're going to be dead in however many years anyways, don't stress too much. And I think that's really just the outlook that everyone's having. It's meaningless, and so to ascribe meaning to her is almost feels hard to do.
Well, and it feels like the logical outcome of the stripper hustler TikTok mindset, too, of like, I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can, do the thing, and then leave. And this is similar to that in a way. And it's just influencer culture. It's like attention economy culture. It's everything. It's the 15 minutes of fame. It's like 5 minutes of fame at this point. But
as we're recording this, like Clavicular just OD'd, guys. And my friend was like, hey, this came a lot earlier than you guys predicted.
Everything's being accelerated in its own way. And I think,
yeah,
she's just another version of that. The athlete thing is interesting. I mean, getting fucked by 1,000 men, she's got to be like doing something to her body to be able to do that. That's crazy.
The hardest thing, she reminds me of Caroline Calloway in that she's got all these like pre-planned like talking points that are on brand for her, but it's really hard to know how she's actually feeling. So she's really insistent that like it doesn't hurt, it's fine. Like she does talk about like pain from sex in like interviews, but like she's generally sort of likes to play it off as like, it was awesome, I loved every minute of it. Yes, my eyes are absolutely bloodshot because of the amount of cum that's been inside of them, but like I love it.
Yeah. Oh my god, it is an extreme. I mean, I don't know, it's the same thing as like a hunger artist, I guess, sitting in a cage in a carnival. Like it is just like a Guinness World thing.
Yeah, she's like someone sticking a bunch of pins in themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And it'd be cool if she talked about what happens to your body when you do that instead of this like persona she's putting on, because that would be way more interesting to me. I'm like, from a scientific medical basis, I just want to know what's going on there. But she's not going to tell me because she needs to get fucked by more men. She can't be like, oh, and then my like vagina turned inside out. So you can't really say that. Like, what's next? Someone skydiving and getting fucked by 1,000 men? Like, what do you think? Like, how far can this possibly go, you know?
She's gonna be the first woman to get fucked by a virgin in space. I don't know.
We saw the far side of the moon. Now you can see the far side of Bonnie Blue's moon.
Of her poon.
Ew, Hannah.